You'll open your Bibles to Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8, starting at verse 19. Luke 8:19. Now Jesus' mother and brothers came to see him, but they were not able to get near him because of the crowd. Someone told him, "Your mother and brothers are standing outside waiting to see you." He said, "My mother and brothers are those who hear God's word and put it into practice." Now, if you don't know the first century, you don't know what's going on here, and if you don't understand the purpose of Luke's writing, you don't understand what goes on here. And it looks very cold, doesn't it? It looks like his mother and brothers are here and he couldn't care less about them. Cults use this passage to get you, once you join them, you can't be with your family anymore. And they separate you from your family. That is not what is going on here. In fact, Paul would later say that a man that does not provide for his own family is worse than a heretic. Jesus will go further and say, you cannot say, "I've given my life to God, therefore I'm not caring for my father and mother, aging father and mother." He says, no, that's wrong. So that's not what's going on. A side note, we do not know where Joseph is at this time. He is probably passed. That's what most theologians guess, is that's why he's not there. Mother and brothers. They did not mention the sisters. Jesus had sisters. The difference between their brothers and sisters was the sisters believed Jesus. They believed their mother's story. The brothers did not until after the resurrection. And so what's going on? They've come to shut him up. They've come to do an intervention, shut him down, take him away as a madman, as a danger. What happens then is that Jesus does a remarkable truth. He chooses his family. Now, did he turn his back on his mother? Well, fast forward to the cross. Had he turned his back on his mother? No. He'd been very involved with her and even provided for her care with John as he died. He made sure she was all right. So that's not what's going on here. There are a couple of things in Scripture which are interesting when you find them. The day that I married Cammy, my mother and father, my sisters, all of those became relatives. And she became my family. And then our family grew to have a couple of kids. And now they got married, which now means even our son and our daughter are not family, they are relatives in the Old Testament way of thinking. And that was a way of saying we've made our choice to make our family, but our first allegiance is right there. We get all that from God. So Jesus was not cavalier about families. If you remember when he healed the guy in Gergesene or Gadarene, there are three different ways of calling it in the scripture, of the demons, and the man wanted to follow him and be a disciple, and he said, no, go back to your family. So he's not anti-family. He's not pro-separation. He's not turning his back on his mother. He is stopping them from preventing him to speak. You know, and as a son who was disowned for years, I can tell you, that's a decision you have to make, and there's some pain to that. The other thing he, though, is doing, and this is what Luke's point is that Jesus is inviting you into his family. Because he's been talking about stuff like a light, a city on a hill. You've got news. You've got a new life. You are being invited now to participate in the life of Jesus Christ. In our church, And I've said this before, but we have people that come in and out, and some of the first time they've been here, or they haven't been here and heard me say this. They come in and they'll say, "Well, you guys, women are freed. We've not seen that before, and able to speak and do things, and the way the communion's done sometimes that's different. You're having an Ash Wednesday thing. What's the in play here? What's your agenda?" And my response is always, "I don't have one. All we try to do is go wherever Jesus is going, wherever the Spirit of God is going, and try not to outrun him and try not to lag behind." Now, sometimes I think we're going to outrun him, and we're going to catch that and we're going to pull back. Other times we're going to see he's moving on and we got to run to catch forward. But this is a church built on prayer. And while prayer is not one of my top 28 gifts, it is the top gift of many here. And so I rely upon them to say, what are you hearing? What are you thinking? What do you believe? What is God saying? And so we move, we try to move at the pace of the Spirit. But again, I just really wanted to stress here, he is not dissing his mom and his brothers. He is continuing his preaching, one, but the real thing Luke was trying to bring up because of the context where he put this is that God invites you to join him in his work. That's that threefold cord we talked about in the sermon. This is why we live what we live and why we say, don't say to somebody in pain and trouble, it'll all be better by and by. No, we try to stop it now. The church I was raised in, if the man was beating the wife, we told her she couldn't divorce him because he hadn't committed adultery, sexual sin. We believed adultery was always sexual sin. And there were some leaders in the church I grew up in that would say, even then, we always said the innocent party can be remarried, but those leaders said there's no such thing as an innocent party. They contributed somehow to this. Now, you want to talk about horrific attitudes and terrible? That was terrible. But what did we tell the woman? We told her, it'll all be sorted out when you get to Jesus. It'll be worth it all. This is your cross to bear. I heard all of that dozens and dozens and dozens of times. Jesus doesn't invite you into his life in eternity. He invites you into it now. Let's stop this now. Let's protect this person now. Let's teach this man this is not going to go. We're not allowing this. And by the way, it goes the other way as well. In America, in fact, there are more domestic violence assaults, women on men than men on women. Did you know that? It's in the 60% is done by women, but it doesn't get reported because it doesn't fit a narrative. But that's true. We would step in between any and say, no, we're not leaving this for God to sort out on the day of judgment. We're involved in his life now. We're going to start working now. If you remember, he said, even if you give somebody a cup of water in my name, I'll never forget it. God's involved even in those wee things. I remember I preached a sermon on that once years ago before I even married Cammie, back when I would have to drive to a place and preach and then stay all afternoon with some family and then come back and preach that night. And that was hell for me because they'll even say, we'll let you rest. No, they won't. Plus, I'm always aware they're in the house. And if I know they're in the house, I'm not relaxing. It's a paranoia, and you know it's all that. But there was a lunch, and I used the passage about the cool water in my name, and one of the wee boys came up with a plastic cup full of water for me, because he'd heard that, he wanted to give that to me, and I thanked him for it. And as he tottered off, I was thinking, what source of water is he high enough to reach? One must think these things. This is, I did not waste all those years in science. We think ahead. So I want to make sure we understood the context there. By the way, all the people who listen online, I haven't tossed this to Dr. Lemons because he's not here today. He may be upstairs or had to.
Hospital.
He's at the hospital.
Grandson.
Sorry?
Grandson.
A grandson. Well, let's, do we have details? Being born. Okay, that's a better detail. All right. Well, good. Let's move on then. And by the way, he would agree with everything I said. Moving on. One of my favorite stories, Jesus calms a storm. One day, Jesus said to his disciples, let's go over to the other side of the lake. It's a big lake. It's not like the Great Lakes, but it's a big lake. So they got in a ball and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake, and if you've ever been there, I have not, by the way, full disclosure, but I know the geography of the area, and I've looked enough into it. A squall came down on the lake. There's a weather maker right there, and the boat was being swamped. If you're not boat people, what that means, their boats were not built like a North Sea fisher boat, which has a deep hull, a sharp hull, and then high rails around. I'm not going to use nautical terms, all right? Rails around. Instead, they were low and shallow. And the reason was because that would carry more fish. They didn't have these issues. Being swamped means when water comes, it's coming over the sides. And that's ungood. And so, you know, people were bailing like mad. And they were in great danger. Now, it doesn't say they thought they were in danger. It says they were. That's important. All right? These people aren't panicking for no reason. There's a reason. This is an issue. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." If you think you're going to drown, why would you wake him? It's kind of like, we're all going to die. Thought you wouldn't want to miss it. You know, it's... What an odd... I love the humanity here. I told you before, I was coming back from Scotland once, and we were hitting some real turbulence, and a guy across the aisle from me leaned over and kind of tapped me, which immediately I was going, all right, looked over, and he said, are you a minister or a pastor or a reverend or something? And I went, yeah, but my first thought was, how does he know? Because I was wearing jeans and a BBC Scotland sweatshirt. I've never worked for BBC Scotland. I just bought the sweatshirt so people thought I would or did. So I just had that, and I'm thinking, yeah? I wasn't reading a book about that either. It's a mystery or something. And he said, yeah. I said, yeah. And he was kind of laughing, but kind of, you know, can't you do something about this? And I said, no, I'm in sales, not management. I you know, God does what he does. That didn't comfort him at all. And I didn't really waste any time talking to him because I believe in baptism. Therefore, if we go down, you know, out of luck. At that point, it's not evangelism. It's teasing. But if we're over the Atlantic, I would say you might want to hold my hand and repeat after me. Anyway, going like this, moving on. You don't ever want to get inside my brain. They woke him up. He got up and rebuked the wind and raging waters. Now, that's not what they were expecting. They were expecting him to join in the fear, join in the experience, right? Ladies, we've studied this, and there are always about 15 to 20% of the women this does not apply to. The rest of you, broad brush here. But it's been tested. You'll hear a noise in the middle of the night, and for some reason, you will lay there and listen to the noise. You will pay attention and be mindful of the noise for a particular length of time before attempting to rouse your husband. I use the word attempting because men are very tunnel vision. They do one thing at a time. You know, women can multitask like crazy. Back in the day when people understood this, I would say men are DOS, women are Mac. You know, they're Windows. They can do many things, but men can't. So eventually you get him to a level of consciousness. You'll say, I heard a noise, and a man will say, no, you didn't. Every time. Every time. It's like, no, blood of my blood and flesh of my flesh just woke me up to lie to me. But then he hears the noise, and he leaps out of bed and grabs a Louisville Slugger out from under the bed, and he's going down the hall in the BVDs. And the wife will usually yell at that point in a whisper, what are you doing? Get back in. The guy's completely lost at this stage. And guys, I'm not going to try to explain this. She didn't want you to go kill the noise. She just wanted to discuss it. I don't get it either. He was sleeping. She woke him up. He's not allowed to kill it. What do you want me to do? You know, because that's really the only thing we're good at is sleeping and hitting something. So they woke him up. And this was not one of the things they would have expected. He didn't join in the fear. He looked up and rebuked the wind and raging waters. Now, when our atheist friends, and they are our friends, we don't ever make fun of them, read this passage, they get all talking to weather. I don't make it any better by the response to this, but I always say, when you see Jesus in a storm story, you need to look at what's coming up. You will find that in Scripture, demons can play with weather. And they can, in fact, Baal was a storm god. You will find this repeatedly. He's not rebuking clouds and meteorological events. He is rebuking the force behind them. Because somebody wants them off the map. Somebody wants them off the playing field. Guess what happens right next? He lands where there's a demon-possessed man who's been terrorizing the community. The devil has owned an area. Jesus is going to take it from him. Every time you see a storm story, look at what's coming next. Now, does that mean that tonight, for example, it's supposed to rain, and tomorrow it's supposed to rain off and on all day? Does that mean I believe the devil caused that? No, no. Do I believe the devil can mess with weather? Well, he certainly could before the cross. I don't know how much he can now, frankly. I don't have that information. But I can tell you that I often talk to God about the weather and how it's being mismanaged. I don't know if you do or not. Yeah, I have recently. In fact, through the entire month of January, I was saying, can you turn the lights on and the spigots running? Or could you go tell Canada to shut the door? It's getting cold down here. And God just says, Michael, see what I put up with. Anyway, immediately all was calm. The storm subsided. Where is your faith? He asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, not him. So human. Who is this? They still don't quite understand who he is. And don't think all those silly people, I would submit to you, we don't know who he is. I'm trying to remember the writer, some of you will remember, I think his name is Phillips, Bob Phillips, wrote a book called Your God is Too Small, back around 1970 or so, became a classic. I'm sure you could buy it for a penny off Amazon plus $4 shipping, because those envelopes are top class. Your God is too small, because he's trying to introduce to Christians, we still have this little tameable God. We think if we just do these little actions in the right way, God has to save us, not understanding the big picture, what God's really going for. So here, to me, I love this. It's so amazingly human. And by the way, just to remind you, Luke was not present during any of this. Luke interviewed people. He was one of the world's first classic historians, in that he went to interview and wrote down what they were thinking and what was going on. Alone among the gospel writers, he'll tell you what Mary was thinking, what the disciples were thinking, because he went and talked to them. And so watch the flow of the story. He even commands winds and water, and they obey him. They sailed to the region of the Gerasenes. Gerasenes, Gadarene, Gergesenes, they're all. And the reason is because if you've not studied a non-Indo-European language, you may not realize this. There are no exact equivalents. That letter is a T in English. That letter is a... I'm reading right now a book on the Zulu Wars. And you might say, why? Because I don't know enough about them. So I'm reading one. The names are driving me nuts. Because they'll go for nearly 20 letters, some of them over, and they'll start with small letters and their capitals in them and no spaces. And in my head, I'm trying to vocalize them. No. Getting nowhere. And you might say, well, why didn't they write that different? The answer is there are no equivalents. We're trying. And there's a Hebrew letter which we try, when we try to spell it, we try T-S-C-H-V. There's no letter for that. And so that's why it's not like, oh, they got the place wrong. No, they're all trying to write a name that doesn't come across to us, which is across the lake from Galilee. That's where he wanted to go. He said, we need to go to the other side of the lake. You see, tie the stories together. Don't play these as episodes. There's a reason they're beside each other. When Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. Now you know why there was a storm trying to kill him? Because he knows where he's going. I remember we'd just moved to Morgantown, West Virginia, there with West Virginia University, Go Mountaineers, and had a lovely 9 years there. And we had only been there, I think, just a couple of weeks, when we were crossing the Cheat Lake Bridge and a semi hit me, just came into my lane. They didn't signal or anything, knocked me and my two kids into the bridge. We left marks where we spun and hit it 3 times. Third time we hit it so hard, my seatbelts broke. It was rough. And the little church there that we'd been attending were terrified that we might take that as an omen that we shouldn't be there. And I went, no, just the opposite. If when we get here, this happens, somebody doesn't want me here. And this isn't how God does things. So it's not God. This is not going to rattle us. We're going to go to work. And we had 9 years there that was just lovely. And they're still my friends. He stepped ashore and met by a demon-possessed man from the town for a long time. This man had not worn clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs. So he's unclean as well. You can't live in the tombs and come around where a rabbi or any observant Jew is. So when he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me." That's not the man talking, that's the demon. And we're about to find some fun here. All right? And by the way, just remember that in Luke was also a physician. He never listed demonic possession as the cause of illnesses. He listed illness separate from, even epilepsy, he mentioned separate from demonic. So this idea of, oh, they were all stupid, they thought all disease was caused by the devil. No, they didn't. They knew the difference when they saw it. We don't, because the devil doesn't have to show up here. We already chase sex and money and every noise that comes down the way. So we don't have to. He doesn't have to show up. You ever go to the mission field for a while and come back, you'll have different stories. Okay. For Jesus had commanded, we wish Luke had put this in order, but he didn't. For he had commanded the impure spirit to come out of the man. Now think about this. Arrange it back into Western European storytelling and put it in order. Now, Jews don't do it that way, but let's do it. Jesus says, let's get in a boat. I got something to do on the other side of this lake. They get there. They're terrified of a storm. He says, where's your faith? It wasn't faith that they wouldn't die. It wasn't faith that he could stop a storm. No, he had told them, I need to be over there. I got something to do. And they were thinking they'd never make it. If Jesus says he's going, he's going. If you're with him, you're going. So you see, that's why the lack of faith. Jesus then steps out, and this wild man reaches up, and the first thing Jesus does is tells the demon, get out. And then the man falls down, and he starts screaming, don't torture me, I know who you are. That's the demon. Demons have inside knowledge. Now, it's in order. Does that make more sense now, the way that fits? Jesus had to come out. Many times it had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and been driven by the demon into solitary places. Again, solitary. The devil wants you to be alone. Now, that's hard for me to say because I crave silence and solitude. I crave it. One of my favorite things about being on a cruise ship once a year is that I go sit on the deck. There's a locked door between me and everybody else. And that little thing will come on. There are all these activities on it. I'm thinking, thanks for the warning. I'll be right here. I tell every morning, I'll tell Cammie, I've got a busy day. Naps and books. Enjoy your life. And because she's normal, she goes out and does stuff. But I am aware that isolation is not a smart thing for me. Because you're going to be seen. You're going to be known. You need to be behaving. Well, Jesus asked him, what is your name? Now that's not the question we would have asked. In the first century, and by the way, in many countries to this very day, not many, just a few now, and perhaps many tribal areas, the name, if you know somebody's name, you have power over them. So when a child is born, they're given a name that is secret, and then they're given a name that they tell others is their name. And that's just, Jesus' community didn't do that, but they had that concept of, you know their name, you've got power on them. Now, I know that sounds really weird. You don't really have power on them, but you would have some inside knowledge, because think about this. Yesterday, the boys' basketball games, there was a separation. So Cammie and I went to the mall on a Saturday because we had forgotten what that's like. And we needed to pick up a couple of things, so we picked up a couple of things. One person kind of recognized us. It's always fun when somebody goes, oh, hi, it's good to see you here. And we're both thinking the same thing. Do I know them? I'm not, yeah, maybe. But hey, hi, how's everyone that you might know? How are acquaintances in your, moving on. We went one time to do a golf outing for a college. It was in another state. And we were walking around the mall that evening because there's nothing else to do in the little town. And this big African-American man came up and just looked at me. And he goes, "Are you Patrick Meade?" I went, "No." "He is." I pointed to the guy beside me, and the guy's looking at me. And I was beginning to recognize this guy. And he reached down, just hugged me. And by the way, he is now the worship minister at Woodmont. That's right after Chris Shields, one of the great guys that in my life. But he would call me Dad back then, which was hilarious because he's like 6'13". I mean, he's big. Big old dreadlocks. And you know, I'm going, "Yeah, yeah, you should see his mother." Just somehow. He's a great man. And by the way, if you ever get to meet Chris, you've met a great man of God. But at Cammie's turn, she said, "I can't take you anywhere." Think of how odd it would be. I mean, we were on a cruise ship in the Caribbean, and a teenage girl walked up to me, and she goes, "Are you Patrick Meade?" Who talked? I'd done a youth rally at her church years ago. I came back to tell Cammie, "We got to behave." On the way down, we'd stopped at a hotel in Mississippi. The next morning, a man in breakfast line recognized me and started going after me for how sinful and wrong Fourth Avenue is. And I'm going, "I just wanted eggs. If I want judgment, I have a family. I know where they are." But you understand then about when we travel, and it's still a surprise. Back then, you didn't travel much. And for a stranger to walk up and know your name, what do they know about me? Who is this person? It's a shocker. So Jesus says, "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied, because many demons had gone into him. It's a little smart aleckney answer. It doesn't have to read that way. Let me tell you the other way it reads. The other way it reads is him saying, "Well, there are a whole lot, it's not one name, there are a whole lot of us in here." The smart aleck way, which I hear, is kind of like, "Well, you know, we got a lot of us." In other words, you know what you're up against here, buddy? Then they begged Jesus repeatedly not to order them to go into the abyss. There's a holding place. If you read the book of Jude, there are some spirits that were loosed, but some spirits that were chained. And people say, "What's the difference?" I don't know. I wasn't in on that decision. Then the scripture does not elucidate. There are some who believe it's because, remember, the Bible says that any temptation that comes upon you, God will provide a way of escape. And that some of them are experts at blocking the escape. And I'm thinking, well, you know, it's possible. There's even logical. But I have no authority to say that. So I'm just going to say some of them he thought were too dangerous to be Roman. And he just locked them up. And they thought they were going to be sent down there to join them. And I can't wait to tell this story. A large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. So Jesus is standing around the guy that's been walking in and out of tombs, and he's in a pig lot. This is so not Jewish, and certainly not for a rabbi. Jesus didn't care about the boundaries we place on things. The demons begged Jesus to let them go into the pigs, and he gave them permission. I don't know why. Jesus, in another passage, says when a demon is driven out of a person, that they roam a desolate area craving to find a home. I don't know. I've read a whole lot, and people are guessing. The Bible didn't give you information. Most of what we know about the devil is actually made-up information that came from John Milton in his three books, Paradise, Paradise Lost, and Paradise Regained, where he made it all up. And it's amazing how much of that became mainstream religious thought. If you've never read the books, don't. They're so boring. They really are. And I love literature, but I love Shakespeare, and Milton bores me to tears. So that should explain something to you right there. Besides, I think he was a bad man. Here's why. He wrote a book called Paradise. He got married. He wrote a book called Paradise Lost. She died. He wrote a book called Paradise Regained. I rest my case. I know it is only correlation, not causation, but I'm prepared to abandon science at this point just because I don't like him. And from all accounts, he was a pretty rough guy. What's going on here? The demons came out of the man, went into the pigs, the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. I was at the University of Michigan. Oh, was this an interesting time. This is back when we still lived in West Virginia. And I got a call from the school up there saying, Would you be free to teach on these dates? Well, I teach at universities all the time. And so I was checking. I went, yeah, I can be up there then. They said, great. I think it was 3 days. Hung up. And when I put it down, I was talking to Cammy, and I went, he didn't tell me what my subject was or what school I'm going to be in, you know, undergrad, grad, med school, what am I going to be talking in? Well, he called back a couple days later, and he says, I got your topic, and I got your school. And I was going, great. And he says, your topic is the Bible and women. And I went, no, you need the theology guy. You need the history guy. And he goes, no, we talked, and yours was the only name that the committee would allow to come. I said, what committee? And it was the Gay and Lesbian Action Group on the University of Michigan. If you don't know the Michigan, University of Michigan is Berkeley North. And I said, thanks, former friend. It was great. We had a good time. One of the first things I did was I walked in and looked, and there was a hostile crowd, I'll give you that. But maybe they had reason. Maybe people mistreated them. So I just walked in and looked at them, and I said, what? And they looked at each other. I said, take your best shot. I'll just stand and answer questions. And that was fun. That really was. Got to tell you one, has nothing to do with this. One lady stood up and she goes, the God in the Bible is against sex. I said, no, he isn't. She goes, yes, he is. I went, no, he isn't. We did that for a while because I'm paid by the hour. I got time. I'll just stand right here. And eventually she kind of cocked her head at me and I said, I work for the guy that invented sex. And we started talking about the Song of Solomon. They got all excited about that. And I said, just be aware that all of the compliments are well past their sell-by date. You know, your teeth remind me of the sheep on a mountain. It just means you got them all. Her nose is like Mount Hermon. You know, her hair is like goats coming off the mountain. I'm saying we don't use those anymore. We looked at the back of the Bible. There was an expiration date on those. But God invented sex. Well, here, one person said, I was raised in a church home, and you say that Jesus never broke God's law. And I said, yeah. And she goes, well, what about this? And she told the story, and you could tell everybody else was going, what story is this? This is exciting. Saying, if Jesus was God, he knew when he put the demons in the pigs that they were going to rush off and drown. Therefore, he knowingly robbed this man of his livelihood. Oh, that sounded solid. I looked at her and I said, they weren't supposed to have pigs. It was a twofer. It was an exorcism and a de-pigification of the area. And besides, it was funny. And I'm not sure everybody got the humor, but I have a good time with it. I learned a long time ago not to be reading my Bible and start laughing and then tell Cammy why, because she doesn't know. I ruined the stories. Those tending the pigs saw what had happened. They ran off and reported this in a town and countryside, and people came out to see what had happened, because those bodies aren't going anywhere. It's a lake. It's not like an ocean. They're not swept out with the tide. When they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone out sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Now, why were they afraid? I think it's fine when religion is your comfort and religion helps you be happy through the day. But what happens when religion gets scary because it's powerful? He's too powerful. Have you seen the Aldi commercial where a guy is thinking to himself in line about how much he saved, and the guy behind him is thinking aloud in his mind, and they can hear each other, and then the woman answers out loud, and they both start saying, don't think, don't think, don't think. As a man, I get this. I do. You know, women will sometimes say, I wish I knew what you're thinking. No, you don't. You would never stop slapping us. But we do not want. I'm giving away the secrets here, but there it is. And so you're sitting around somebody with this kind of power. Are you going to be comfortable? And when we were a kid, there was a hymn they would sing called There's an All-Seeing Eye Watching You. Anybody else remember that one? You do? Anybody else? Oh, my goodness. And we had this song leader, this little guy named Ralph, who lived for polyester. had layers of it. And he would sing with stepping out and stepping back and pointing to beat. And it was pretty terrifying. And I was a wee boy there. And every time there's an all-seeing eye watching you, it was like, I'm dodging, you know. Yeah. Kind of like Neo in the Matrix movies. Just let that one go by. That guy probably deserves it. You know, it was terrifying. That didn't make me feel good. When Bible talks about that, it's supposed to give us comfort because he already knows, as C.S. Lewis put it, whatever is the worst you know about yourself, God knows even worse than that you don't know about yourself, and he chose to love you. Let's just be all right. Let's just be okay. Let's calm down. Well, they're terrified. Well, look at this, the next one. Those who had seen it told the people how the demon-possessed man had been cured. Then all the people of the region of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them because they were overcome with fear. So he got into the boat and left. Now there's a little coda here we'll do in the last 3 minutes, but I want you to understand this about Jesus. When there was no room at the other ends, God didn't kill those people. He let them turn away God. So Jesus was born elsewhere. And if you don't want him, he won't stay. He will turn away. Think about how terrifying that is. In the Old Testament, in my opinion, the worst of the curses was not, I will smite you, but he told some, I withdraw my hand. That you do not want to hear. I withdraw my hand. And so you don't want me here? Okay. And he didn't leave like, ha, 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 ha. No. God respects our choices. Think about that. He respects them. Even if he knows they're the wrong one, he tries to reach us. He hadn't done anybody harm except for the pig farmer who wasn't supposed to be doing it. The man from whom the demons had gone out begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away saying, return home and tell how much God has done for you. So the man went away and told all over town how much Jesus had done for him. So Jesus couldn't stay there because of his own rules. But he left somebody behind to tell his story. Does that sound familiar? Jesus ascended, and what is our job? Tell the story. Because the world doesn't really like Jesus much, if we're being honest. So we've got to show them the love that they missed when they heard about Jesus. Come on. Christians can be some of the meanest, closed-minded people you ever meet, right? Fact is, most of them aren't. Most of them are really good people, but the mean ones get all the press. Fair enough? So let's just be the representative of Jesus. And you've heard me say this scores of times in the 6 years I've been here. Just love people till they ask you why. Don't lead with Jesus. Don't start with Jesus. If I have a t-shirt that says, ask me about Jesus, nobody's going to talk to me in the airport. It works. Especially if you have a family edition Bible. Walk around with it. But if you love people, they will eventually ask you why. And then you can talk to them about Jesus. These people weren't ready for Jesus, but Jesus knew they'd listen to one of their own. Some of them would. So he said, no, you don't come with me. Your family missed you. Stay home and just talk about this. How cool is that? That's amazing. It's so human. It's so wonderful. And we're going to leave out now, and we'll do chapter 9 next week. I'm looking forward to next week. The sermon won't be a sermon as much as it will be an interview with four people on stage talking about how do we apply Ecclesiastes as we have it, as where we are now, right? And then we're going to go right back into it. So I'm looking forward to that. But there will be class after, and I'm looking forward to having you there. But it's 11:45, so if I were you, I would go somewhere. Cheerio.